my song. Let's sing it. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Come on, it's gonna be freaking awesome. You know the words. It's gonna be freaking awesome. That's it, say. It's gonna be freaking awesome.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Coolest Geek Alive with me, your host, Jesse Blaze Snyder. Thank you so much for being here. Being There is a good movie, though. If you've never seen Being There, ooh, go see Being There. That reminds me. Maybe that's today's homework assignment, and we can just start off with one right here. Ooh, what a lovely mistake. Today, we have come to talk about MODOK, and not to praise him, but to bury him. Holy crap! I had to talk about this after the screenwriter basically talked a lot of shit about anybody who was shit-talking MODOK and the way they handled it. And I am here to tear this crap apart! If this is your first time here, thank you for coming. If this is your now third time here, because this is our third episode, you're the best! I love you guys! Yeah! I feel like I have a family. No, I have a family. So... ugh. Ant-Man Quantumania. I just want to say first that I want this stuff to be great. I mean, I really want it to be great. I spoil movies that I start to suspect I won't like so that everything that I'm not going to like about it, I know before I go in. And I've actually really enjoyed movies like The Eternals, even though it's a travesty that they did not style it after Kirby and that they just kind of used it as a vehicle for, you know, diversity, which is just... I love diversity, but I want it to be natural and, and I don't want it to supersede an opportunity to bring to life the artwork of Jack Kirby. And I think that there's probably a way to do both things at the same time, as opposed to take one as more important over the other, especially with the other being the artistry of the thing that I love. So, as a professional comic book writer, someone who really set out to study hard and understand these universes at the big two especially, and what they were, how they worked, why people enjoyed them, so that I could be the best man for the job when I was going out to get work as a comic book writer. My pursuit to understand comic books in particular, and really all of these different artistic mediums, whether it be film, which I studied really hard. I've always loved film, but I started to really study it technically when my brother Cody became a filmmaker because I wanted to be able to work with him and, write something that, he could make because I love him and I want to work with him. So I studied films and I watched them and documentaries and things to study up on what it was that I was really doing, writing something for my brother. Writing comic books, I did the same thing for the audience and the fans like myself. I was like, all right, well, I'm going to understand all of this better than anybody does so that I can do it at a high level and I can be beloved by this community of creative people and fans because I feel united with this community. Anybody else who appreciates what I appreciate here about comic books must be all right in my book. Like, it was sort of like a golden ticket to be my friend. You read comic books? I read comic books. I love comic books. Comic books are about good people and, important subjects, heavy subjects, interesting things, interesting ideas. I like comic books for all those reasons. So you must be somebody who's interested in ideas and interested in virtue and noble and positive. And if you, and I still believe that to this day, I believe that if you read comic books, you are inherently noble. This is what I believe. I believe if you read comic books and are drawn to comic books, it means you want a better world and you appreciate anybody who's trying to do something. Who's trying to do something. Who's doing what you can't do, making the world better in some small way every day. And granted, I think we all can do something. We all can do something to make the world a better place. But, you know, that bit of comic books are aspirational, makes you want to reach for the star, make you want to have the physique of He-Man and Superman. And so for once and for all, I love this stuff. I want it to be great. My criticism comes from a place of knowing, truly knowing how great it can be and wanting to see the best version of my favorite fiction in the universe be brought to life as true to its original form as we can have, you know, with similar visuals, colors and costumes and delivery and setting and story-wise, what the vibe, energy of the thing. When you read a great Batman story as a fan of Batman, you know when the writer is doing it. And it's not that like he's doing himself, but he's doing Batman. He's doing a great impression of some of the greatest people who have written Batman. He's doing a great Frank Miller. He's doing a great Alan Grant. He's doing a great Chuck Dixon. He's doing a great, you know, whoever it is that you grew up with. I know for a lot of people, it's going to be older writers and stuff on Batman. And I don't know those people because I came along later. But, you know, he's doing a great Ed Brubaker. And some of the people that I read who I fell in love with their Batman or Grant Morrison. There's so many people who have been able to learn the song Batman and write a Batman comic that feels like Batman. And it shouldn't be too hard to do a movie that feels like Batman. I mean, granted, we've gotten close to it with the Christopher Nolan saga. But even that, you know, my mom had said to me a while back, she was just like, I don't really get it. I think Batman's boring. His villains are the most interesting part. And I'm just like, absolutely, because they have not done a good job at bringing forth Batman, the Bruce Wayne character, the guy whose secret identity is his identity. You know, he's really this dark, super focused man. You know, he's this interesting, credible person. And part of it's because they never take it completely seriously. And, you know, that's the thing that I want to talk about next. As a writer, and I've studied writing, starting with comedy, you know, the feeling of comedy from stand-up comedy and the best films, comedy films. My father went out of his way to instill comedy in me from a very young age. And I would literally wake up every morning before school and watch half of a movie in the morning. It was my wake-up routine, when like have breakfast and watch half of Blues Brothers, half of Blazing Saddles, half of Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and any number of other movies. A VHS copy of Animal House that had all of like the boobs cut out and the curses cut out that my dad recorded off of the TV for me to enjoy. But I loved comedy, and comedy was the first sort of thing that I observed or absorbed when I came into this world. What I learned studying comedy is that truly the best and most powerful comedy is taking something that is ridiculous and playing it straight. I think we can all agree that Gene Wilder is one of the greatest comedy minds of all time. A work study for you would be to go watch Young Frankenstein and to watch Gene Wilder talk about Young Frankenstein and the writing process there, because I had learned these things watching those movies. And I would have told you this before I saw not a recent, because it's, you know, it was an old interview with Gene talking about the movie. And I was like, I've always recognized that the reason why Young Frankenstein works so well is because it's this silly premise done legit. It looks legit. It's filmed in black and white. They're not laughing at each other's jokes. They're taking the joke seriously, and it's the audience
being just, oh my God, look at what's happening here, and nobody's saying anything about this. Like, this isn't being addressed. That's the stuff where the best comedy comes from. You know, Monty Python, I'm a huge Monty Python fan. If you're out there and you're a big Monty Python fan, so if you've watched like deep into the Flying Circus, I've watched every episode of the Flying Circus like probably I don't know, some of them like 30 times, but every episode at least like 3 or 4 times. I love Monty Python, and the best skits, it's always the same thing. You know, this the absurdist concept being, hey, I am a guy trying to return a dead parrot because it was dead when I bought it, and I'm having a conversation about this, and we're taking it as seriously as we can. And that seriousness to the absurd is the same thing that makes fantasy good when it's handled legitimately. The comic books of Captain America aren't jokey the way Captain America and these things are jokey. He's James Bond. And I think that we'll get even better material from the Marvel Universe when they start taking this stuff a little bit more seriously than they do now. Even taking something like MODOK more seriously than they are in this movie. Because when you make the kind of jokey thing a joke on top of the fact that it's kind of a jokey thing, instead of making it better, you make it worse. You got to focus on the good things about MODOK, the interesting things about MODOK, like he's a giant head, he's a grotesque being. That's cool. You can use that. You can turn that into something. The MODOK in this movie, you know, case in point, he looks just kind of goofy, like a stupid person. He doesn't look scary and frightening like he did in the comics. And even though he's weird, he doesn't think he's weird. He thinks he's frightening. And bigger than that, he's got mind powers. He's smart. So we're making fun of him looking at the image, but he thinks he's legit, you know, and that's the funny thing about MODOK. Ah, foiled again, you know, that kind of thing. That's fun and funny, not this stupid guy got kicked around and they're like you missed the whole fun of MODOK. The fun of MODOK is he's MODOK and he's gonna take over the whole world, and then he gets his ass kicked by any number of superheroes, and you're like, that big head's never gonna succeed. You know, that's what we want to see. That's fun. The ongoing narrative of MODOK, even though I'm a giant brain in a big chair, you know, like that is funny. That's what we want to see from MODOK. Not him being a wimp and being just the like the whole thing was them emasculating what's his name, the Yellow Jacket character, Darren, or I don't know what his real name was in the movie, but that point of using MODOK as a way to emasculate the bad guy from the first movie, that was just so weird too. What a strange choice. The movie is just filled with so many strange choices like that. So first, let's talk about Ant-Man Quantumania and the general good of it. As a Marvel movie, it was basically solid and unoffensive to me. I was enjoying it despite a thing or two that was a bit pointed and weird and out of place as far as I'm concerned. But whatever, it was good. I'd give it maybe as high as an 8, even though I can't say that it makes much of any sense at all. And I'm not sure it really teaches us anything. But like, as a fan of the previous Ant-Man movies, I love them. I don't know, your mileage may vary, but I love Paul Rudd and I really enjoyed those movies. Director Edgar Wright, who I really love his movies. He's done Scott Pilgrim versus the World, a movie called Baby Driver, also Shaun of the Dead. You know who I'm talking about if you know who I'm talking about. He's brilliant and he framed the first movie with some great a skeleton. He made a skeleton that was really perfect for Ant-Man to live in. He was an ex-convict. He had these friends of his who were convicts trying to better themselves, but with convict sensibilities. He had this girl that he was going after who was really an overachiever and, what do you call it, a trophy almost that he wanted to be worthy of because she's very smart and she can kick ass, and he wants to be like her. You know, he wants to be more like her. And sort of a mentor figure with a little bit of a mixed relationship through Michael Douglas and his Hank Pym character, which is, for people who read the comics, that was more who you associated with Ant-Man and Giant-Man for a long time, was Hank Pym doing all that stuff. Though the Scott Lang Ant-Man, which I read in Geoff Johns' run on the book, which was really great, Geoff Johns' run on Avengers. If you've never read his Avengers book, he was at Marvel for just a little while, and he wrote a few things, but a Avengers, I don't know, I want to say maybe only like two arcs, like 12 issues or something like that. Not too long was he at Marvel. And it was like before DC fully started appreciating him, he started to work at Marvel, and they were like, whoa, that's our guy. Geoff Johns is great. He's one of my favorite comic book writers. I've been surprised that he hasn't been able to succeed more in Hollywood, because I think he's such a brilliant writer, but I think that he's gotten a little spooked by, you know, there's a lot of red tape in Hollywood. There's plenty of good people who have the right answers and could give us stuff that we would love, but there's a lot of people above them that they have to answer to, and so often mandates rule the day. And mandates, I tell you what, mandates just screw up art all the time. Any mandate of any kind is just going to imbalance something that could be really well balanced and beautiful and wonderful. And but then you get some mandate from on high, and all of a sudden what you're working on isn't as good as it should be. Anyway, Edgar Wright created a skeleton world of Ant-Man that was wonderful, and I thought they did a pretty good job repeating some of the success of Ant-Man 1 in Ant-Man and the Wasp, continuing that world, bringing things forward. And, you know, the character of Luis in particular, I adore that character. I adore that actor for bringing Luis to life, and his telling of his stories where we see things in flashback and everybody's speaking, but his voice is coming out of everybody's mouth. I think that stuff's amazing. And Ant-Man Quantumania doesn't have any of it. There's no Luis. There's no band of criminal buddies tagging along for the ride. And that made it not feel like an Ant-Man movie to me. I would probably give the other two Ant-Man movies an 8, but Ant-Man was unique. And this movie, I might give like an 8 without the, if the MODOK stuff wasn't included. Like for reals, I give the movie like, I want to give it like a freaking 5 because of that, and the fact that it doesn't really make sense. Because damn, MODOK opens it up to criticism. I'm like, this MODOK thing is like a deal breaker for me, especially after the damn writer talking shit. And I'm going to get to the article in a second. I'll read to you what he had the gall to say to me. Not to say to me. He said it to everybody. He said it to all of us. Did you hear what he said to us? That's what I was saying. Did you hear what he said to us? That bastard! That's where I'm coming from on it. I haven't gotten there yet, though. I haven't gotten there yet. This did not feel like a sequel to Ant-Man. I don't know exactly what it felt like, other than sort of like generic Marvel movie. And I didn't really feel like we learned anything from it. It didn't really get us anywhere. Like I said, you know, it didn't make sense. They get pulled into the microverse from this device, and you know, Janet hasn't revealed any of this information to them. You know, they could have very easily wrote it as in, well, Janet told us all this information about Kang, and he's in the microverse, and we're trying to see if we can do something about it. And then somehow they get sucked in because Kang's smart, and I figured out a way that somebody was monitoring me, and I've pulled you through to the microverse. There are ways to do that story differently that make it more successful. My kids really enjoyed the movie. My kids have generally enjoyed all of the last phase of the Marvel movies a lot more than I have. But at the same time, they haven't been rewatching them. And many of, like my daughter, she's the oldest one, my 13-year-old, she snapped on She-Hulk. She was just like, I'm done. This is garbage. And she has not went out and raced out and watched everything, which I think that says something about Marvel's choices. You know, she skipped a lot of the TV shows. I watched all of them except for Ms. Marvel, but she skipped Ms. Marvel, and she skipped I don't want to put words in her mouth. I'll have her. I'm going to have her on and do her interview in a little bit. Oh, actually, I didn't get to talk about this, right? So I've got four kids and I'm doing interviews with them all about their Disney Plus experiences. So like Marvel, Star Wars, Pixar, and Disney Animation, and like general Disney Plus, they've all had it like since they were little. They've all been raised on Disney and Marvel and all this stuff. And I want to see, you know, where they're at. So I'm interviewing them. I already did the interview for my two youngest, my six-year-old Parker Pride and my eight-year-old Grayson Wayne Snyder. Next up's going to be my older son, Cassidy. What is Cassidy? 11, I guess. And then Logan's about to be 14. So I'm going to have her afterwards, but I'm going to interview them and you're going to get the perspective of a child who has been raised and encouraged by their parents to like this stuff. What are they really coming away with? I think you'll find a lot of their answers really surprising. Anyway, that's going to be coming up on The Coolest Geek Alive. I'm very excited to say. Anyway, so I don't know. I give it a 6 on the level of an Ant-Man movie. You know, I just want to be like a producer at Marvel, able to like look over their shoulder when they're just about to go into anything with like the scripts and just conceptually be like, hey, guys, you know, not being a dick, but what do you think about adding in a little B story with Louise and company having watched Scott and everybody else disappear into this microverse and literally looking at this device that Scott's daughters made like apes, like, what are we gonna do? We gotta save them, man. And like, and they start getting to like some crazy shenanigans, elaborately trying to figure out how to save them, trying to learn science and like, and all this stuff. And then Louise can go to the supermarket and like, he can be gone for a really long time. And like, he finally comes back and they're like, what happened? He's like, well, let me tell you. And then he's like, you're seeing this whole like scenario that he goes through going to the supermarket, or maybe he goes to like the Avengers compound. He's trying to get some help from some character who's adjacent. The Falcon's like telling him off and Luis is speaking through the Falcon's mouth. That would be really, really funny and fun. And then you can have it where just as they win in the microverse, Luis and company, like they flick the switch on some device that's never going to work. It's not even plugged in. And then we did it. But the audience knows they didn't do shit. And they know that they didn't do shit. This is just like off the top of my head, man. There's so many great things to do, and that would have made it feel more like one of the Ant-Man movies. Like, so again, I'm critiquing this not from a place of like wanting to watch the world burn, but from a place of, oh man, I love Ant-Man, and we missed something great about the Ant-Man franchise. And this isn't even something from the comics, but it was something wonderful that you guys created, and it would have been a good idea to keep it going. That alone made me bummed about the movie. I was most bummed about that there was no part for them to play. I had come to really appreciate those characters. I watch Ant-Man a lot, like as like a background movie kind of thing, something I'll put on with my kids. Or I've watched it enough that I've fallen in love with those characters. Maybe I was in love with Louise from the start, but like I've fallen in love with all of them. You know, you've been able to appreciate, because a lot of them are just kind of doing a bit of kind of pantomime, a lot of reacting and stuff, but they're great. All their characters are really unique and dialed in. And is it like the Polka Dot Man is one of the guys. That was a bit of a deal breaker for me, to not carry that thing over. And even, you know, you could have gotten an appearance by Bill Foster, you know, the Lawrence Fishburne character from the last movie. Louise could have been trying to reach out to him and see, and he could have been trying to help them or something like that. And you could have actually had them help or whatever. There's a lot of different ways you could have tied it in more to the previous movies. You know, Michelle Pfeiffer's character, she showed up last movie and now we get like her whole backstory kind of thing. But like her backstory made her a little shifty and like don't trust Janet Van Dyne. Yeah, I don't know. All of that departure from the actual Ant-Man films took away from my enjoyment. And then additionally, its lack of, I don't know, moral. The moral to the story is this. Like, I didn't feel like I learned anything from this movie. And maybe, you know, drop me a comment. Please subscribe and rate the podcast. Give us 5 stars to make up for all those people who are being mean to me and giving me 0 or 1 for no reason. You bastards. You bastards out there. Can you give 0? Can you give 1? I don't know. I think 1. Is it just 1? 1 is like the lowest you can give? I don't know. Don't give me a 1. Give me a 5. Give me a 5. Give me 5, everybody. Give me 5. And subscribe to The Coolest Live Podcast. And drop me a comment. You tell me what you think. Like, do you see some redeeming message overall from this movie about, I don't know, I didn't really like learn anything. And in fact, I felt like the way MODOK gets treated in the movie is actually really lame. The reason it's okay to make fun of MODOK in the comics is because he's a big brain. He's really smart and he thinks he's got his shit together. This guy's Igor. It's like making fun of somebody who's crippled in some way. He was disfigured and we were laughing at his misery. I can't get behind that. I want us all to win. I want to see a better world. And for it to be so acceptable that this guy was bad, so now I want to watch him suffer. I mean, like, if I was like a more biblical type person, I'd say, you know, thou shalt not judge. You know, I used to say to Christians who would tell me I was going to hell because of, you know, whatever thing that I didn't believe or wasn't saved by Christ at the time. You know, now I tell you I'm saved by everybody. I'm saved by all of them. Oh, I'm saved by the Buddha and I'm saved by the Christ and I'm saved by this plant right here and I'm saved by my cat and I'm saved by the earth. I'm saved by all. I'm saved. So don't send me anything about needing to be saved. I'm saved. I'm saved. I submit. I submit to all of you. I love you all. I submit. You're all great. You're all great. I love you. It's all great. I love you. I'm great too. We're all great. We're all great. We're going to be great. We're like, as Donald Trump would say, you're great and I'm great. We're all great. Everybody's great. Yeah, for the sin of being, you know, not necessarily a teaching moment in the Marvel Universe, and for not really making a lot of sense as far as how the microverse works or how any of this shit works, it just seems like things just happen so the movie can happen. Why can't he get out of there, Kang? Why can't he get out of the microverse? Why is he such an important Kang that he has to be exiled to this place in the microverse? I don't think they did a good job of explaining any of that. I think in particular, a big crime of the movie is defeating Kang. When we saw Thanos from afar, it was told to us that he's a big deal and it's going to be a problem when he finally gets here. We didn't see him a few times. And first Loki beats him, and then Ant-Man beats him. I don't think you understand how this works. Maybe it's because you don't watch enough wrestling. In wrestling, you build up a character, you build up to an event. You have to establish a character as undefeatable. You can't just kick the guy's ass and kick the guy's ass and kick the guy's ass and expect that all of a sudden when we get to movie number three, the audience is gonna go, oh no, it's Kang. The audience has now been trained to go, ha, that Kang, got him again. Kang tried it again, but we got him. The effectiveness of the Thanos tease payoff is not the same here. Not at all. I don't think that this is effective. And then even showing us an arena full of Kangs. Yeah, there's an arena full of every single one of us. Every single individual in the whole world has an arena full of them. So it just sort of like opens up this door and creates a situation where people aren't exactly unique. And how do you introduce the next Kang so that he feels like he actually has a chance of being more formidable than the last one? And when that movie concludes the same way, you know, your audience generally never wants to see Kang again, unless he's a small part in a larger story, unless he's become now a running gag because we get what he does. A new Kang shows up. He's slightly different than the last Kang. We think we're going to lose, but we don't. We beat the Kang. Kang's gone. These are the repetitive patterns that people often will accuse comic books of having. I think that people like me, who are professional comic book writers or creators, they notice that pattern as well. So the best of us are constantly trying to avoid that pattern by changing up the stories in various ways so that it's not just that over and over and over again, but you're getting something a little bit more interesting and nuanced and unique. Because we can tell the stories in comic books any number of ways. We don't have to just have it be that simple formula every time. So this movie sets a pretty crappy precedent for Kang and just adds to Kang's loss record. Not only does Kang lose twice, but he loses to arguably the most comical and laughable hero of the Marvel Universe. This isn't to say that I don't enjoy and like and respect Ant-Man, and, you know, but the Ant-Man doesn't get any respect at all kind of thing is, you know, that rubs off on the villain. We introduce Kang getting defeated by the Hulk. All right, if you wanted to get this right, right, you make a movie where Kang shows up and he kicks somebody's ass. You know, maybe the hero survives, but he literally gets reamed. Leave us on a cliffhanger there. This hero needs to get revenge. He needs to team up with another team. He needs to, when Kang needs to get taken down. That's somewhere to go. They need to bring back that Marvel Brain Trust. I don't know, for those of you who are younger, you might not remember, there was a Marvel Brain Trust who was responsible for phase 1, 2, and I think 3. They had at least some input, and a lot of them were very major comic book writers and editors who are incredible minds and creative people in their own right, and they were part of advising to Kevin Feige what was going to be the Marvel Universe. And I believe that they are the ones who are largely responsible for why it was so great at the time. And I think Kevin Feige took credit for the whole freaking shebang. And I think recent phases have demonstrated that he didn't really know what the hell he was doing, not on the level of the people that he was working with. And when he came out in the front of this thing, things have been in a steady decline ever since, as far as especially honoring the source material. And you know, on Coolest Geek Alive, that's what we care about the most. So, MODOK. This stupid guy. I just want to be such a jerk about this because, like, I feel like he is being such a jerk to the fans, and I protect the people I love, and I love the fans, and I'm just like, I'm bothered. But I won't name him by name, but I'll say, hey, man, if you're ever listening to this, and me, I'm talking about you, of course. This isn't about you, man. This is about the ideology that you're professing, which is sort of a detachment and too cool for school kind of attitude towards the people who you guys are supposed to be making this stuff for. I understand in Hollywood that it's cool to not care, but when you make geek culture material, you gotta at least care a little bit. You gotta transform into a geek and care in the right ways. And this answer that he gave to the question here, this is an article that you can read on film/film.com. It says, Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania writer defends MODOK. I'm gonna just give you a little snippet of this article, just the beginning and then this question here. So it says that this is by Ethan Anderton. Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania may not be a critical darling, but writer Jeff Loveness is riding a wave of ecstasy after writing the Marvel Studios sequel that really let him take the Marvel Cinematic Universe into some of the strangest sci-fi territory the multi-billion dollar franchise has ever seen. With roots that began at Jimmy Kimmel Live and eventually took him to the writing staff of Rick and Morty, Loveness is a comedy writer at heart, but he relished the opportunity to write a classic and tragic character like Kang the Conqueror, with actor Jonathan Majors taking the out-of-time villain's dialogue to the next level. Okay, so it goes on to say a little bit of other stuff here, but really I'm just going to get into his question, okay? He says, let's talk about MODOK, because he seems to be the most divisive part of the movie so far. Personally, I think that it's a really creative way of bringing such a weird Marvel Comics character into the MCU. Was that purely your idea, or is that something that was kicking around Marvel Studios because there was a rumor that Paul Rudd wrote an early script for the sequel that included MODOK and AIM? So interesting that Paul would include MODOK and AIM. Like, first complaint, MODOK and AIM go together. And this doesn't set up AIM, you know, like really creating a universe here is about setting the things up that exist in the universe. But you have to know about the Marvel Universe in order to know that, you know, you got to set up the hand just the same way you set up Hydra, and you got to set up AIM. And one of the main attributes of AIM that makes AIM interesting is MODOK. And AIM is all these evil scientists, and they're smart, and MODOK's a giant head, he has a giant brain, and he's super smart, and that's the whole MODOK thing. He's smart. He's not stupid like he is in this movie. So complaint number one, MODOK is stupid? What the? Sorry. I started having fun with it at the end. The first few were genuine. A stupid MODOK. Oh, it's just killing me. Okay, sorry. So, here is the answer from this, the writer of the movie. He says, oh, right. I don't know anything about that. I never read anything like that. I don't know. It could, maybe, but it was never in my time over there. I believe it was Peyton Reed's idea to make Darren Cross, that's the original Yellow Jacket from the first movie, into MODOK. Bad, bad idea, Peyton Reed. I really, oof. But I immediately jumped on that, so he liked the bad idea, and pitched real hard on it. I think we kind of built that character together. Okay, well then, both of you guys, I didn't want to name anybody, but now he named Peyton Reed. So, okay, I'm sorry, Peyton. I'm sure you're a very lovely guy. And really, dude, Peyton, I love the first two Ant-Man movies. And generally, I don't mind this movie a lot either. I like this movie a lot in a lot of ways. But this MODOK thing is a big problem for me. And I'm as respectfully as I can, I gotta critique why it's so terrible. But first, let me give you the next paragraph for the writer's answer. He says, let me just say, the people who are divided, they're wrong. Never say this to the fandom. Never tell people that they're wrong for feeling the way they're feeling. So first off, right there. And this writer isn't the only person who is guilty of doing this in pop culture, geek culture, whatever. Like, they are doing this all the time. Oh, they're wrong. Like, no. You go, oh, I'm so sorry that you guys feel this way. I hope that we can make you happy in the next installments. I hope that there were some things in the movie that connected for you. You know, like you be gracious about it. You're a salesman. You're selling your book, your movie, whatever. Like, so don't tell the audience they're wrong, okay? First off, continuing, he says, I will go to the mat for MODOK. So we're doubling down now on, you're wrong. I'll go to the mat for MODOK. All right, and you're about to go to the mat for MODOK. I am so happy, and it was such a fight, and it was such a labor of love and passion and all that just to get the comedy balance of this guy. Comedy balance, all due respect, what comedy balance? You guys are bullies. You turned a strapping villain that was Darren Cross, and I liked him as a villain in the Ant-Man movie. I thought a powerful villain, and you turned him into Quasimodo and then made fun of him for being in a place and state of suffering. This is your comedy? I'm not trying to judge you, dude. And like, obviously, it's not just you. You guys all thought that this was cool. But dude, it's not cool. It's really, it's a bit morally corrupt at the center of a franchise and a larger universe that is meant to be uplifting and meant to teach morals through action. You know, the world of Captain America and Superman, though dominated by white characters throughout, let's say, the 60s, 70s, whatever, it was not a world of racism. You know, there wasn't racial things going on where Superman was going, hey, you're a black person, so get in the back of the bus. Like, Superman loves and saves everybody. And, you know, it's been said that, like, Superman's not saving the black people. No, he is. He always has been. Like, that's that happens all the time. You know, go read some comics, man. Like, it's like, this is your weird, skewed idea of the universe. But really, it's these characters have always represented the best of what mankind has to offer, not the warring sides of the political party. You know, there's no question that these characters aren't sexist and they aren't racist. All right, so getting back to the rest of this quote here. So he was saying, and hey, I'm a big comics guy. I'm sure you are too. I don't think you're actually a big comics guy, but maybe you are. Or maybe the famous quote of so many of these writers and producers is, I was more into indie comics, which means you don't like superhero comics and you avoided them as like a social protest, and you picked up a different comic book, and now you're bringing your social protest to my book that I do like and I do appreciate. Sorry, I know enough to read into the things that are being said so terribly sometimes. Continuing, we're on the internet, people got opinions. Those motherfuckers are wrong. I'm sorry. You want to do a serious take on MODOK? A serious take on MODOK? I played that Avengers game on PS5. Good luck. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Come back later. I'll take all the punches that they want, critiques, whatever. But MODOK? No, 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 no. I'm very happy with what we did. And then the interviewer placates him, said, "I love it. Yeah, I'm glad to hear you double down." He says, yeah, that death scene, I will triple down. I think that death scene is my favorite that I've ever written. I love it so much." Dude, that death scene should not be your favorite you've ever written. It's, once again, a part of a bullying that is on display in this movie. You could have mitigated that disaster by making him smart. He's a smart character. Do you understand how you fundamentally fucked up MODOK? MODOK has a character. He's the leader of AIM, and he is a smart character with psychic powers. He's been mind controlling people and stuff. You guys went out of your way to make his arms and legs skinnier and so he would look more depressing and lame and screening and scrawny. And his face has no terror or might or, like, you know, his expression is like wide-eyed and empty. It's so weird the way you've had him play the part. You have just gutted a science fiction monster that is hysterical. The hysterical thing about, or the occasionally hysterical thing about some of these science fiction monsters is that they exist and they take themselves seriously. The moment you make them not take themselves seriously, the audience can't take it seriously either, and then it loses its funniness. So it's not funny. It's not funny. You have not made the, "Yo, man, we maximized the laughs out of MODOK." No, you didn't. I'm telling you, you didn't. You can get some great one-liners and quips from characters around MODOK while MODOK is really being MODOK, and it'll be funny, and seeing him be legit and seeing him think how legit he is. "MODOK, designed only for killing." You know, the story of MODOK is that he was an experiment that they were doing. Like, he experimented on this guy to make his brain really big, and he gets turned into this human computer designed only for computing. And then he changes the last letter to a K, and he becomes the same name, MODOK, but a machine designed only for killing instead of only for computing. So there's a little bit of a funny story why this thing happens. And AIM's one of my favorite sort of generic bad guys. You know, you don't have to necessarily have whole storylines about all these characters all the time, but you can have Captain America doing a mission to take out an AIM base, and MODOK's there and he's arrested again, and now he's in the prison, you know, one of the Marvel prisons, like the Raft or whatever. He's in the prison now, and now when we go to visit the prison becomes a location that we get to visit that's filled with characters that we know because we watched the heroes put them away in the prison, and now we're excited about that. And now you can tell a story about the Thunderbolts, you can tell a story about the Suicide Squad, because we got a freaking prison filled with villains that we want to know more about. But instead, they just kill everybody all the time, and you literally had the Darren Cross character embarrassed and then redeem himself in the end in the movie just to emasculate and make fun of him some more on his deathbed. Dude, I cannot tell you how freaking stupid and wasteful these decisions are. Maybe there's an argument from you that's true, that on some level this is funny to somebody laughing at this guy's misery. I would say that those people aren't the best people who are laughing the loudest at those Darren Cross as MODOK jokes. I would say that those people are all a little suspect to me for finding that so humorous. I did not find it really humorous at all. And knowing the MODOK character, knowing what might have been, I wanted to cry. I wanted to cry. We lost something. And you tripling down on MODOK and telling the fans are wrong, that was not the approach to go. You are wrong. You were wrong. Fundamentally, that was a bad idea. And you should take a page from Gene Wilder's script and create a legitimate MODOK. Because that would be funny. MODOK done right is funny because it's ridiculous. MODOK done as a goof is just a goof. And goof laughs and belly laughs are different things, man. Goof laugh. Funny laugh. That's funny. That's giggle worthy. You gave MODOK a giggle-worthy entrance into the Marvel Universe, and you killed him, and you introduced him in such a convoluted way that to introduce him correctly at some point in the future is literally going to be confusing to audiences. And You lost aim. You lost the menace and interesting science fiction grotesqueness of MODOK in favor of something that is just stupid. It's just stupid. Don't. Yeah. All right. That's all I have to say about that. That's all I have to say in this huge rant, like as if I haven't said enough. I'm going to have to cut this episode down a little bit. Please comment and add your thoughts and be nice. I'm nice. I'm nice. I'll be nice to you. I mean, I'll be nice to you even if you're not nice to me. But like, be nice. Please. Please be nice. You know? And like, if somebody's like mean and you see that they were mean, be like, yo, dude, be nice. Right? Like, I'd love to have a really great interaction with you guys and to be able to talk about this stuff and just know that like I'm coming from the best place you can imagine. I love geek culture. I love role-playing games. I love comic books. I love great films. I just want to see more great stuff. And that's what I do for a living. I make this stuff. I make comic books because I want more of them, more great ones, more of them made with love. And, please don't shoot the messenger who has thoughts that maybe you might not be thinking. But whatever you think, put it in the comments. Be nice, and in the future, I will do an episode where I answer lots of questions, and we'll have some fun. Anyway, join me next week. I'll be talking about Man of Steel and its sort of cultural impact. Now, really talking about the good and the bad. I rewatched it. I have new, fresh feelings on it, but. From the perspective of somebody who is a Superman fan, I was very disappointed at the time. And, you know, it was a really bad first foot for the new DC universe as far as I was concerned. And, you know, I wanted to talk about it at some length, but really be able to go into detail about why I felt that way. Please rate and subscribe and join me next week when we talk Man of Steel. If you want to support me, you can follow me, Coolest Geek JBS, on Twitter. And listen up for my announcements about King of Kings on Kickstarter. It's going to be launching probably next 2-3 weeks. My comic book is an awesome labor of love. A lot went into making it what it is. I'm really proud of it, really excited to get it out and get it into our customers' hands. And I hope you will go out of your way to support the book. It deserves your attention. Last but not least, thank you to Dilf USA for our awesome theme song. That should be on Spotify and iTunes any second now, but I've had some problems with delay of the release. So it's coming. It'll be there. Just hold tight. Anyway, love you guys. Join me next week. Peace.
Isn't that heavy?
You've been listening to Coolest Geek Alive with me, your host, Jesse Blaze Snyder. Don't forget to rate, comment, and subscribe for more excellent geek culture content. Thanks for listening.
It's gonna be freaking awesome.
Living legit.
It's gonna be freaking awesome.
Food in our mouth.
It's gonna be freaking awesome.
Get in our mouth.
It's gonna be freaking awesome.
Tell all your friends.
It's gonna be freaking awesome.
Draw right on text.
It's gonna be freaking awesome.
Raising the bar.
It's gonna be freaking awesome.
Straight to the stars.
It's gonna be freaking awesome.
It's starting.
Awesome! Friggin' awesome! It's going to be friggin' awesome! Just wait! You'll see! You'll all see!